Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Cast, I'm Zach Burchy. Justin's here.
Hey, everyone.
We got a jam-packed show today. It's all about Otakon, the East Coast's biggest anime convention, which just made some kind of an announcement this morning about something that's happening. We'll talk to them about that a little bit. But returning back to the show, I think this is your third appearance. It's our friend and the director of guest and industry relations at Otakon 2013 and Otakon Vegas. It's Jim Voles. Hey, Jim.
Hey.
Also joining us today, we've got Andy Earnhardt, the president of Otakorp Incorporated. Andy, thanks for coming on.
No problem.
And also joining us, it's Terry Chu, the Otakon 2013 convention chairman. Terry, I appreciate having you here.
Pleasure to be here.
So, I guess right up front, this is a huge year for Otakon, and the convention isn't for, many months, but it is your 20th anniversary, and that's a big deal.
It's our 20th year, actually. Otherwise, people will call and tell you, no, it isn't. It's their 20th year. It's not their 20th anniversary.
Okay. Yeah. Could you explain the difference?
The 20th anniversary would normally be 21 years afterwards, but in this case, it's Otakon 20. That's why we've been referring to it as the 20th Otakon or Otakon 20 and avoiding the word anniversary, which trips me up all the time, too.
So it's just pedantry then.
Yes, but thankfully the fan world is blissfully unaware of pedants.
Yeah, they're super easygoing about stuff like that. Okay, well, so congratulations on your 20th year then, and I guess right up front, let's get the promotion out of the way. What's cooking for the big show this year?
Well, actually, we have quite a bit that's been going on in planning. We're a little less than 6 months out, and we've been spending a lot of time coming up with what we're going to do, what we're going to cover. Obviously, you've already seen the announcements, the guests that we were announcing during the Month of Awesome in January, leading up to the biggest announcement of all, which was the return of TM Revolution. And partnering up with TM Revolution is Homei Kazuku, so HMKU, doing a collaboration show, which is pretty much, I think, the first time that we've actually attempted a collaboration show in the stateside.
So you would consider the musical guest to be the big get?
It's one of the big gets, and I'll let Jim talk more on that.
It's the first big announcement. I mean, my personal feeling is that we've announced nothing but some fairly heavy hitters so far. Right. And that's kind of what we're aiming for. We've just announced one per week for the first month. We're taking a little break to let some of the other stuff roll in and some of our other feelers out. Personally, I like to do waves because it gives you a chance to sort of catch your breath and see how certain guests are received. And it also gives us time to coordinate with industry. But we're negotiating for some wow guests. and of course, I'm always in the position where I can't really say too much. Right. But yeah, I think that we will have relatively few complaints by anyone that we'd care to listen to, at least. There will always be complaints.
Of course. But, you can't let that overrun your perception of how the news is being managed. I would imagine, when it comes to announcing guests, when you have really, really big guests, you don't, even if you've got everybody else nailed down already, surely you don't want to do it all at once, because then anything less than the biggest guest just gets ignored or...
I don't know. I think what really happens... from the outside perspective, is everybody assumes that we're saving stuff for the last minute so we can get the most dollars out of people, which is not at all the case. What is usually the case is that we'll start talking like in October, And then by December, things are moving in earnest. And then by January, we're signing contracts. And for bigger guests, that can sometimes be as much. I mean, it took us about 2.5 years to get
Larkin Ciel.
Yeah, Larkin Ciel, that would be one of them. And I'm completely blanking on on the last one like that. But but yeah, I mean, it's not unusual for bigger name guests to have a long lead time. And some of them, the timing never works out. Right. So we kind of keep going with it in waves pretty much nonstop. But yeah, I would expect the next batch of announcements to come out probably in March.
So typically an anniversary year is a time for maybe a little nostalgia, maybe some reflection. And I was really curious if the programming this year and to an extent the guest lineup is there any sort of attempt to sort of capture the history of the show in the show itself this year?
Absolutely. We've done a bunch of things to kind of look back. I mean, our very theme this year is celebration. And by celebration, we're looking back and we're celebrating not only everything that brought us here, but also a little bit of what's to come. So our programming was built around that theme of looking back and celebrating 20 awesome years and 20 shows. So we've done we have the return. One of the biggest returns is one of the fan favorites, MAT3K. We have return of popular guests such as TMR and HMKU. We're doing programming on the panel side to look back and reflect at the industry as it has been in the U.S. and how it's come to here, the history of conventions in the U.S. And the growth of fandom. We're actually building a entire room that we're calling the Oda Museum, the Otakon, you know, looking back at 20 years of Otakon itself. We even went as far as, you know, tossing around ideas of trying to do silly things like run all of Otakon 1994 simultaneously with Otakon, 20. But, you know, as amusing as it is, it becomes a little difficult. So we've kind of scaled back and looked at it and said, okay, let's actually do a full out museum and have that running throughout the course of the show. So we're definitely modifying and approaching things from that historical reflection point of view and that nostalgia.
When you say running, when you're considering running Otakon 1994 concurrently, now this brings to mind the incredibly amazing idea, and I'm pretty sure Justin would be on board with this if you had a set like two rooms where. Going into it, it's almost a little bit role play where you can only cosplay as characters that were popular in 94, and it's all fan sub tapes and VCRs and tube TVs.
Well, I think that would be repellent.
You're not too far off the mark. We had actually talked about, you know, digging up old VCRs and CRT monitors and the technology that we had available then. That was one of the crazy ideas is, you know, you could run all of Otakon 1994 in the lobby.
Right.
We have more staff now than we had people in 1994 by like twice as much.
If I'm not mistaken, I want to say that was actually one of the ideas was trying to run it in the lobby as Regline runs through.
Absolutely. We were talking about if we could go back to the days of having tape to the ever popular tape, we were going to lay out the entire convention map for Otakon 94 in the lobby of the BCC and run the line through the shape of the convention layout.
That's neat. That would be neat, but sounds also like a huge pain in the ass.
That's not the problem. The problem is that 3M stopped making the tape that we're allowed to be used on the floors of the BCC.
Oh, I see. Okay.
These are problems that you never expect to have when you're a kid and you say, hey, I'll go to an anime convention.
Right, exactly. So while we are still a little early out, can you tell us a little bit about programming besides major guests? You mentioned some returning people from... you know, popular acts from the last 20 years. But what else can maybe people expect to see this year that maybe they wouldn't normally see at Otakon?
Well, go ahead, Terry.
Okay. Well, it's difficult for us to commit to anything, obviously, because right. you know, as you said, we're still a months out, and much of what we can announce can't be announced until ink is dry, or at least the plotting and planning is set out. So we talked about the museum, the panels. They're still being formulated. So it's unfortunately it's difficult for me to be able to share everything that we had in mind and everything that's come up throughout all of our brainstorming sessions. We've talked about doing things along the lines of bringing back guests and bringing back convention chairmen and individuals that had a part to play in the establishment of not only Otakon but the industry. So, ideas along the lines of bringing guests and industry members from the companies that were fundamental to this in the U.S. So, bringing back individuals from Central Park Media, for example, or bringing individuals from from ADV and Funimation and every single company that we can pull together to kind of ask them, how did it get Animego, even for example, to ask them how did they get started, how did they decide that they were going to bring shows to the U.S. that there was no exposure to at the time.
And one of the things that is challenging, of course, is that some of them are in different roles now, and some of them have moved on to other realms of their life. But, Scott Argenziano, who was last year's president and who was in charge of programming the year before I was, he and I are beating the pavement and, making the difficult phone calls and sending very guilt-instilling emails where appropriate to try to get as many folks back, to come back for one last time. And honestly, that's a technique that we started with about 5 years ago, trying to get the Mr. Anime Theater guys to come back and do one more time. So it's not just about looking back, though. It's about, It's really about getting an idea of what it took to get there, because there are people on our staff for whom Otakon has always existed.
Right.
And that's just weird. It's weird. So it's you got to know where you've been before you can kind of get your bearings and look ahead.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, for the three of you, and I'll start with Andy here because he hasn't had a chance to say much. When did you come on with the show? How long have you been with it? And same question for all three. I'd like all three to answer that. Where do you see the show going? Like, where did you start and where do you see it going?
Well, I started attending, I guess it was 2000 that I first started attending Otakon. There was a level of not really staff that existed in about 2002, 2003 that no longer exists today. That's how I came in. Friends sucked me in, and then from there became more involved with the organization and more involved with Otakon, and have continued to do so through the years. The funny thing is the friends that have sucked me in have since moved on and done other things, and I'm still at Otakon. I have a good time. It's a lot of work and a lot of hard work, but it's really fun. Where do I see it going? That's a tough question, to be honest with you. I see us continuing to grow and mature and trying to deliver the best content that we can possibly give our members. I mean, that's kind of the way that it goes, and expand on the corporation's mission, to be honest with you.
Okay. Terry, same question.
So I actually started attending Otakon in 1997 and had my first year on staff in 1999, actually the same year that Otakon moved to Baltimore. So throughout the time that we have been in Baltimore. I have been on Otakon staff, and I've been on staff. I've done a lot of different roles. You know, some people know that in 2004 I was the convention chairman and the president of Otakorp, and have really kind of bounced around quite a bit. Now, where do I see it going? The convention, I think, is evolving. We have always, every year, changed and learned and decided to, you know, to move in a slightly different direction and refine what it is that we do. And I think over the last 5-6 years, it's been particularly evident that we are more than just sharing pop culture. We really do try and hold to our ideals and to the mission, to our mission statement, that we are an educational group, that we're not only gathering together to celebrate pop culture, but we're really here to learn about it and to try and share with each other what we can get out of it. So when we bring, you know, so I think that we're going to see more of that. We're going to see more, you know, cultural imperatives. We're going to see more educational imperatives, you know, where we can actually learn and grow as, you know, all of us toward, you know, to towards something better. So bringing over individuals like the Yoshida brothers, not something that you would normally expect out of what people would consider just pop culture. Yoshida brothers are, you know, a traditional instrument. They're you know, very deep, very soulful. I think that those things that and they played to a packed house. We're going to see more things like that. People are going to get inspired by what they see, and they're going to learn, and they're going to want to come back to Otakon and, you know, encourage us. Okay, what else can you bring? What else can you show us? How can you, you know, how can you grow? And everybody is going to grow with it, I think.
Interesting. Huh. And Jim, I'm sure you've answered this for us before, but, you know, give us a recap.
Let's see. So I started attending in 96, so I've got Terry beat by a year. But I was only there for one day, so it's not really that much.
Bunch of show-offs.
Yeah, I know. Get off my lawn, you damn kids. I started volunteering in 99, but I didn't join staff until 2002. And then in 2006, I was the convention chairman and president. And since then, I'm going to say this, even though it's going to make it sound really strange, but since then, we've kind of largely decided that most of the time it's better to separate those roles, because as we've gotten bigger, we've diversified. And you need someone to keep an eye on everything and someone to focus on each event. So we've gone back and forth about that since then, but that's kind of where we've been. And I would agree with Terry. I think that we've really seen our members embrace the cultural side as we've been bringing more and more of that to bear. The example that always sticks in my mind is when we had the Rakugo performer, and we stuck him in a mid-sized room kind of hoping maybe we'd get it half full, and we had 600 people who couldn't get into the room. Mm. And he was telling jokes on another, or, you know, jokes that came from another language. So it was cool. And, you know, that's the sort of thing that I'm always talking about the mission, usually after a couple of martinis or a half a bottle of Jameson's, you know, passionately espousing the awesomeness that this goofy gathering of pop culture nerds can bring about. But, you know, it's been kind of inspiring, and we've really, especially the older crowd, we've really been sort of looking for ways to highlight that meaning. And to their credit, you know, for all the kids today with their rock music and their crazy Twitters, for all that they get accused of being very shallow, a lot of them have really embraced it, and that's kind of heartening. And as for where we're going in the future, more of that, more evolution. You got to change. If you don't change, you die. And I've been around for long enough to see that happen to a lot of sci-fi conventions. And that's kind of the model that the convention world follows. So you change or you die.
When it comes to changing the convention or expanding or growing, you know, we've talked with other people that run conventions, and at conventions we've had discussions with the people that are running them. And you know, it always kind of comes back to this thing where the idea of an anime convention just being an anime convention is – it's already pretty outdated. I mean, Otakon isn't just an anime convention. It's more a celebration of – certainly animation, but also, you know, Asian culture in general. And we've had you on a couple of times, and we always bring up the dread specter of the Homestuck and My Little Pony kids taking over the convention. And it's become the sort of reality that having that stuff at your show sells tickets. And it guarantees that that crowd will show, and generally in big numbers. And you guys are, every time we've talked to you about it, you have talked about how you are, you'll have like maybe one of those things, but you're generally resisting letting it take over the show. And I'm curious, over the last year, over the last couple of years, we're sticking to this, we're gonna stay the course, and you're not actually seeing any kind of significant drops in attendance because you're not specifically catering to that crowd that does seem to be taking over a lot of anime conventions.
No, so I feel like there's a crowd that loves whatever is the new hot thing on the internet. Mm. And, you know, it might be Doctor Who, it might be My Little Pony, it might be Gangnam Style, you know, whatever it is that's caught their attention, that there's one crowd for whom the ephemeral thing of the moment, the memes, the whatever, is what they get into it for. But you know, every now and again, I'll read a comment saying, oh, I went to the Otakons because my friends was going there and ha ha ha. Mm. And then they come back the next year and they're like, oh, my God, I saw this really awesome thing. And then 3 years down the road, they've joined staff, right. You know, and those other cultural influences have been there since the beginning. I mean, There's none of us that is a monofocused nerd, really, in the whole organization.
Sure.
I mean, this year, you were talking about anniversaries. This year, Doctor Who turns 50, Discworld turns 30, and we turn 20.
Right.
It's just really bizarre that to think of that, but that's people are allowed to have broader interests now, and the information that allows you to enthusiastically pursue those things is so much more readily available that really those people that are coming here lured in because of stuff like that are really, they're seeking a community where they feel welcome and wanted. And maybe that doesn't mean that we carve off, as someone suggested, can't we just use that ballroom for the Homestuck photo shoot? We're like, no, we're using that for programming for what we're here for.
Right.
But you're welcome to wear your horns and gray paint around the con, because we're not going to kick you out for dressing like a stormtrooper or whatever. It's come as you are, but we're going to stay focused on what we do best and not exclude anyone who is on the periphery of that.
Right, you're not going to cede programming ground just because there's a group of people that want you to.
And you know what? I am still waiting for someone to do a panel talking about how Asian culture is reflected in the longest running sci-fi series of all time. I would be there in a heartbeat. Well, I'd want to be there. I would be stuck somewhere else, but I would want to be there because that's actually very fertile ground. There's no reason why we can't talk about, say, My Little Pony as a Sentai team, because that's what it is. You know,
right. Do people ever? No, I was just going to say, like, so, and I think you brought this up before, where it's like you wish people would submit programming ideas that made this other thing that nerds happen to be into relevant to your show.
Yeah, and sometimes they do, and sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. Those are two examples of things. I mean, look, I'll watch the ponies. I like the ponies, but it's not the passion for me that other things are. I just got done going to a Doctor Who convention. That's more of a passion for me.
Right.
But there's no reason why you can't find ways to connect and show the links between all these cultural things, because that's what we're about.
Right. Makes sense. Terry, you were saying.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Jim had his stint as programming director last year. that hat on for a little bit there. We have a very, you know, we have a very clear mission that, you know, we hold to. And by and large, I think that the majority of our membership understand that. And that's why, you know, that's why a good number of them keep coming back. Right. We will absolutely welcome, you know, other interests. I mean, we, you know, as Jim rightfully says, we're all multicultural nerds to one degree or another. We're not going to tell you that you cannot show up, but we are going to hold programming and hold our events to that basic mission. And we do follow a certain rule. If you can bring something to us that relates it, then it is right in our mission, and we will gladly welcome it. But there has to be some way that you can show that it makes sense to us, you know, from a topic and a cultural standpoint.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So moving forward, that mission statement's going to stay there, and it's not going to, you're not going to see the generic, like, the idea gets thrown around of, well, a lot, I think, anime conventions, smaller ones anyway, you might see them largely just turn into internet culture conventions. I think that's going to start happening before you know it, if it isn't already starting to happen.
Well, a good example is Kineticon, which has become the de facto webcomics con.
Right.
They're deeper than that, but they became quickly, because of how they're structured, it was very easy for them to adapt to fill that niche. And that's great. You know, every con should have its own flavor and its own identity. Ours is actually in bylaws that the IRS will hold us to. So
yeah,
that kind of helps us. Every now and again, our lawyer or our accountant or somebody cranky in the back of a room will, sometimes that's me, will say, guys, mission.
Right. Yeah, because the temptation to – I mean, there must be a small temptation to be like, you know, this show would be twice as big if we just converted it into, you know, PanderCon.
I think it's more than just a notion or an idea. I think it pushes itself out there a good bit, but like Jim says, the bylaws kind of kick us back in place. And there always seems to be somebody to remind us of it, and rightfully so.
Our staff are very passionate.
Right.
And they're all passionate for slightly different reasons or over slightly different things. But by and large, our staff will always correct us and bring us back on mission. You know, the urge to submit, to just bring in more bodies. We're quite sizable. We're quite established. We don't need to. We don't have a desire to chase for growth, just for growth's sake. Mm. Instead, we have the luxury of holding to our mission and holding to that, to our ideal, that, you know, and what we're trying to do.
Okay. Well, before we move on to your announcement, Justin, did you have anything on this year's show? Or
no, not really. I'm just kind of waiting to talk about the new stuff.
Talk about Vegas. Okay, so yep. This morning, it's Thursday when we're taping this, in the evening, the day you guys made a really big announcement that you are expanding. You've got a new convention coming this January. I think it's the 3rd through the 5th in fabulous Las Vegas, which is a very interesting prospect, and there's a lot to go over here. So before we really dig in, how did this get started? When did you make the choice to do this expansion? And what's the mission for Otakon Vegas?
Oh. It's Andy's fault.
That's right, Jim. Just toss me out in front of the bus.
Under the bus, sir.
Driving it, honestly. the mission is pretty much isn't the same. It's very much the same as Otakon. It's to embrace and extend and educate about Japanese culture through pop culture itself and what's popular at the time. It started about what? I think about 2 years ago, I think, is when we really started. It was kind of this crazy idea. We were asked to come out and look by the folks in Vegas. They said, hey, we've heard about you. We really think that you'd be a good fit out here. Why don't you come talk to us? Why don't you come look? I'm involved with, I say involved, I participate in a charity run out in Las Vegas every December. So I was like, oh, okay, no big deal. It's October. I'll be out there in December anyway with my wife and family and friends. And I can take a day of my own time and come talk to you guys and see what's going on. So we did that. They had this really crazy idea that we would pick up Otakon and move it to Vegas. And it's taken us about 2 years to change that perspective. That's not what we want. We don't want to move Otakon to Vegas. That's crazy. Our fans would kill us if we did something like that.
Your staff would kill you.
Yeah, our staff would kill us on top of it. That's not what we want to do. We want to start something new. We've had over the past couple of years and even before then, you know, Otakon's become this huge juggernaut. It's a large group of people, and we all embrace the event. We all embrace what's going on. We all love anime. We get along. But there's still some that say, you know, 33,000 people crammed into a building or multiple buildings is just too much. I can't handle it. And we lost some of those folks. And that's what we're trying to recapture. We don't want to lose those folks. We want them to be involved. We want them to be engaged. And that's part of what we're wanting to do. Also, what we want to do out there is it's a whole new kind of world in the sense that we've got a new venue. It's a return to our original it's a return to what we originally started at, and we don't want to lose focus on that. We want to extend and embrace that, and as such we're trying to do this crazy thing, and we're trying to bring in and try stuff that just doesn't really scale to Otakon, or at least we don't think it will scale to Otakon. It's easier to bring a little bit more experimental programming in when you've got a smaller audience that may be a little bit more forgiving, or it's easier to try new stuff when you're not having to program 70 other events all at the same time.
Okay, so that begs the question, what do you mean when you say experimental programming?
Oh, I really wish I could tell you what's going on. Well, there's this huge plate of stuff that we've got that is I really do. I really wish I could tell you.
So what happens from time to time is that people will come up with ideas that sound great, but we know if we put them in a room that fits 200 people, that 800 people will show up. Mm. And if it doesn't work, then you've got 800 unhappy people, whereas we don't have small-scale areas to try stuff out in, really. And the classic illustration of that is Maid Cafe last year. We tried Maid Cafe for the first time, expecting maybe that we'd fill it up most of the time, and we had more than half the people that wanted to go to Maid Cafe could not. It was too successful for its own good, and that really made it rough for our staffers that were running that to cope with sudden massive success. One of the advantages to a smaller event is that when you try something and it's not successful, the cost of failure is lower. But when you try it and it is successful, you don't get crushed by the weight of your own success.
Yeah, that kind of stands to reason, because this has been a thing about Otakon for a long time where – you guys have kind of outgrown the venue. Like, I don't think that's unfair to say. Like, the show has kind of outgrown the venue. If you could actually fit, like, if you're telling me you got 1,000 people in line for whatever panel, and the only obstacle is you don't have room for 1,000 people for any one panel, this seems like, is this sort of like maybe a potential expansion thing? Like, obviously it's an expansion thing, but like, Vegas has unlimited convention space. You will have nothing but space there. So how does that work? How do those two things connect, I guess?
So there's a couple of things that I'll comment on that. When it comes to – it's not necessarily that we don't have rooms for 1,000 people. We absolutely do. What we don't have is an unlimited amount of time and an unlimited number of slots that we can offer to – to those kinds of an event. Right. And also, when we're bringing in 30,000 people, it's any event could be a runaway hit. So you don't have the opportunity to really test and try anything out. Now, when we look at Otakon Vegas, yes, that's absolutely something that we were looking at, that Vegas has that, you know, that room for growth and room for expansion. But it's still for Otakon Vegas. It almost doesn't apply to Otakon itself, because we're obviously not going to take Otakon, plop it in a box, and ship it over to Vegas. The logistics won't work. We would be violating the agreement with our membership if we were to bring Otakon itself. But it does give us the ability in Vegas to experiment, to try things that if we say, okay, you know what, we don't have space, we don't have time for you at Otakon, at Otakon, but we have a place where we're treating as a lab that you can go to in Vegas that we can try this event. We can try. I'm running into the same thing that Andy ran into. I can't talk about some of these things that we've come up with. But also with Otakon Vegas, that experiment, that space aspect comes into play, because we get to do things that we used to do with Otakon itself, like the way Artist Alley was a little more open. It would run all the time. It's common with conventions to run an Artist Alley overnight or 24 hours. We can't do that at Otakon because of the way the venue is built. Maybe we have that opportunity. We can look at that again with the way Vegas will run. Of course, I'm not going to speak too much on that because that's Andy's little baby, and I'm going to stay out of the way before he kicks me.
Hey, I'm not the con chair.
That's true. You're not the con chair either.
Well, one of the things that's on the table because of this is Otakon, while it has always embraced other aspects of other Asian cultures, is primarily anime, manga, J-pop, J-rock, whatever. It's that end of the spectrum has always been its heart and its focus. The world is very different now, and there's a lot more cross-cultural fertilization, and one of the ideas is we're going to take all the things that we know and love and give them a place to plant their seeds and see what happens. I mean, for all we know, Thai culture will take off in a big way, and this might be a place where we could do something with that more easily and let it become part of that con's identity as opposed to Otakon's identity. And that's right back to our mission again, is because you don't want to change something that works, but when you have cool ideas, you need a place to plant them and see if they grow into anything. And that's one of the things that this can offer.
Well, so not that you got the idea from them, but this is similar, sort of taking a page from Pacific Media Expo, which does very that's kind of what they do. It's pan-Asian. It's not just Japanese culture. It's the entirety of Asia.
We've been showing Hong Kong cinema since 1994, so we've at least had that aspect of it covered. But yeah, PMX, and I had the conversation about that approach to things a long time ago with Mike Tetsugawa, and it's the idea that all of this stuff should be gateway drugs to more cool stuff. And in our case, that's our mission, is to take the fact that you watch an anime and then realize a year later that you've sort of learned a whole bunch of stuff about how Japanese schools work, despite yourself. That's one of those things that you suddenly realize, crap, I actually know what Oban means, and little things like that just sort of creep into your consciousness. But deliberately providing a venue for exploration is part of why both of those events exist. And I suspect, without putting too many words in other people's mouths, that's the idea that drove the creation of PMX, because it was more complex than that, of course, but part of the reason that drove the creation of PMX and many other small, quote unquote, spinoff cons or related cons is the fact that the con and the vision that an individual working for the con has can sometimes diverge. This isn't quite so drama filled as some of the other examples have been, but it is something that we had in mind as a place that could take that pressure. Because you got cool people working for you that are passionate about something, you don't want to lose them.
So, in other words, it sounds like the message to take away from this is: do not expect Otakon Vegas to be a carbon copy of Otakon.
No, not at all. Not at all. We don't want it to be a carbon copy. We want it to be something new, more of an extension of the learning portions or the educational portions, without being overly educational, I guess is the best way to put it. I'm not really exactly sure, but I mean, we certainly don't want to just. It's not like we're laying Otakon on a copy machine and hitting start and a second copy of Otakon pops out.
Right.
That's not our goal. The goal is to expand on our mission and to really just expand on the mission itself.
Right. You're giving birth and then sending it off to become a degenerate gambler and hardcore alcoholic.
Ooh, no, maybe not. No, that some would say that's probably my personal role, but that's I don't think that's what we're trying to do with Otakon Vegas.
Well, that leads me into my next question. Aside from the fact that they're recording you, why Vegas?
Vegas offers a lot, to be honest with you. It's it's straight up. It's a new location. It's a destination event or a destination point. A lot of people already know it, are familiar with it. It's one of the two lowest priced airports in the U.S. to fly into and out of. Hotels are relatively inexpensive, especially compared to other major cities. There's tons of food, just amazing food everywhere out there. And we're looking to kind of offer an Otakon style event for our members on the West Coast who just can't always make it out to Baltimore, but they want to be involved with us, and they want to go to a show, and they want this stuff, but they want to be involved in Otakon, and they just can't for one reason or another, and this provides them an easy outlet to get to it and to be involved in the organization.
One of the things that being part of the committee that helped select Vegas and decide and push to evaluate that this would actually work. We looked at Vegas and said, okay, this is a hub. This is potentially a hub for a good amount of the region surrounding it. When we look at Otakon and why Otakon is successful, it's because it's readily accessible by multiple means of transport. And, you can fly into Baltimore, you can drive, you can take the train. It's centrally located. Vegas, on the other side of the Mississippi, we felt had the potential to play a similar role. You can bring in people from surrounding cities, from surrounding states, and bring them to a place that has other draws too. So it's kind of gives us a good spot to try and plant the seed.
Is there any concern that, and this has been brought up a little bit, and firstly, is there any concern that any time anyone's attempted to do an anime convention in Las Vegas, it has failed? That has not worked out for anyone yet. Obviously, those people weren't working on 20 years of experience like you guys are. But is there – did you look at like Anime Las Vegas and those previous conventions and go like, well, why didn't this work?
Well, Anime Vegas has been around for 10 years.
Yeah, I mean they're doing well.
Oh, okay. That's not that's not the narrative that I'm familiar with. But
they're at least hanging on. I mean, and they're a different organization than we are.
Right.
So it's there's a different reason that different cons exist, and that's part of the reason why we didn't feel like we were stomping on toes. Is we're going out there with a different purpose in mind.
We're going out there with a different purpose, but we were also very careful in selecting our time of year.
So
we wouldn't step on toes. We wouldn't step on Anime Vegas, and we wouldn't step on AnimegaCon that just started last year.
Yeah,
we were very confident and recognized that possibility was there, and we were very careful to not do that. we want that ecosystem, that con ecosystem, to function, and we want everybody healthy out there to do it.
Justin, you were saying?
Yeah, about the timing. I have to admit, I'm a little bit thrown by scheduling it the first weekend of January. Could you explain a little of the reasoning behind it?
There were a couple of times. Some of it has to do with contract. A lot of it has to do with we were looking for a time that was available, that there really wasn't a whole lot going on. The first year, it's right after New Year's. It's a big time out in Vegas. A lot of people are out there anyway. We wanted to make this kind of a destination event. Being that New Year's was so close, we figured the first year, why not? We'll go for it. I don't want to give away too much is the thing. It's not all the first year. There's the second year is a bit different. We have different dates, but
yeah, I think
really everybody's out of, I mean, college kids are out of school, high school and, essentially high school kids are either getting ready to go back and they'll go back the Monday after, or they're going to go back even later than that. College kids don't go back for multiple weeks afterwards. So it offered a good time. Typically around that time, especially to Vegas, airfares very low, or one of the lowest that you'll find. And we were able to get good rates, and we've got some really good stuff for the folks that come out and attend, our members that come out and attend.
And, you know, aside from the time of year and everything like that, is there a concern when it comes to Las Vegas that, in general, your audience is, I would say, not old enough to drink? Vegas is a very 21 and over place. They went through a brief period where they were trying to appeal more to families, but most of what you can do there, you can't even walk into half of those places if you're not of age.
It's funny you mention that, because when I went out to meet up with Terry and some of the other folks that were going to be out there, but Terry's usually my degenerate gambling buddy, and I was like, all right, I'll go out to Vegas with you. And then instead of taking what was supposed to be an hour to meet with some people that were interested in talking about the possibility of maybe doing a convention in Vegas, we ended up spending, what was it, 6 hours that day?
That was about eight, actually.
touring every damn facility in Vegas. And since I had been deprived not only of my freedom but also of lunch, I asked a lot of tough questions. And the first one was, well, what about kids? And then they proceeded to point out that there was a cheerleader convention happening there. There was gymnastics competitions. There's a lot of kids stuff there, and all the casinos know how to deal with it. That was a big surprise to me, because it's perception. But just as the perception is that if you only know Baltimore from television, you expect either everyone to be like divine or to shoot you in the head like they've come off the wire. You know, right. Vegas has, in some cases, well-deserved reputation, but there's actually a fairly robust infrastructure there. And where we happen to be is backed up onto a mall. So there's other outlets there for people who want to have fun. And the casino is actually structured to allow that.
Yeah, that was one of the things that came down to our venue choice as well, is the way that the venue is structured. You can come down from your room, get to the convention center, and never step foot in the casino. You can get to and from with no trouble whatsoever. So that was certainly considered in our venue choice.
I guess the answer basically is, hey, we somehow managed to make parents okay with letting their kids go to Baltimore.
Well, I think it actually goes a little beyond that, because this is, let's be honest, this is Vegas. We're trying to approach this from a destination point of view. Even with Baltimore and Otakon, there are people, the parents will come to Baltimore and explore Baltimore. We're certainly hoping that parents will be more than happy to come to Vegas and, you know, explore Vegas while people are attending the convention.
I predict a lot of conversations where mom and dad go, well, okay, I guess you can go to Otakon Vegas. We'll find something to do. And then the kid's waiting by the elevator going, "Mom, Mom, can you answer your phone, please?" You know, and she's at the roulette wheel. But, you know.
Where's Dad? And cut to someone digging a hole in the desert.
I was going to say smash cut to the bus home and Mommy and Daddy aren't speaking to each other.
Well, one thing that, about Vegas that it's interesting that you talk about, whether alcohol or gambling or whatnot. We joke about me being the degenerate gambler. One of the things that some people know about me is I don't drink at all. I have zero interest in alcohol, and yet I can go to Vegas and have a perfectly good time. First time I went out to Vegas, I didn't really gamble that much. So I don't drink, I don't gamble. I'm still having a great time because there are shows, there's food, there's arcades, there's museums. There's a lot to do out there that has nothing to do with the adult image that Las Vegas has.
Yeah, sure.
Will there be a Coke on a stripper's ass discount?
Yeah, look, you're gonna deal with these jokes for the deal. Next year.
I'm sure you can find a nice gentleman, not too terribly far away, who could procure some of that for you.
So I think we have a pretty good idea of what exactly this event might look like. I know a lot of people are really curious about that, and I'm also sort of I did want to mention this. Everyone talks about on the East Coast complaint. They complain that there's too many conventions on the West Coast, and on the West Coast we don't complain because we live in the West Coast. a Vegas centric convention has, I would imagine, more of an appeal to the place where there really, certainly there aren't any big conventions aside from maybe one. The entire middle part of the country that we refer to as the Midwest. And I'm wondering if, like, in your planning, you saw this as a more attractive destination maybe for the millions of people that live centrally in the United States but don't necessarily want to have to pay to fly into Baltimore, which is not the cheapest place in the world to fly into, and don't want to have to come out to Los Angeles or anything like that. Was there a thought that maybe you might attract a new, more Midwestern demographic?
That was part of it, yeah. That was definitely part of it.
And there's the fact that we looked at who comes to Otakon and we're surprised at how many people are coming from farther afield. Not to mention the out of the country ones, but the folks who come to Otakon who are west of the Mississippi, it was a surprising number.
It was a surprising number. We pulled that, and I think it kind of shocked all of us. We're like, really? Wow.
If half of those people come, we'll have enough to pay for the first year, you know? It's like, oh, wow. Okay.
Wow. All right. Well, that's all very exciting. I look forward to seeing how this goes. Justin, was there anything else, or are we about ready for Twitter?
No, I think we're ready for Twitter.
Okay. All right. Got some questions for you from your fans on Twitter. Okay. We got one guy, this Penguin Truth dude. Apparently he had a bad experience in an autograph line when he went to Otakon once, and he is asking if the autograph line situation is going to change this year or if the policy about that has changed. Now, I couldn't tell you what his exact experience is because he didn't tell me, so I can just relate to you this generic complaint.
Okay. Well, then I'll give you some generic answers. The generic answers are that the demand will always outstrip the availability for popular people at Otakon. Just no way around that. And that happens at cons of every size. You could, and someone probably will at some point call him on this offer, but you could put Vic or Crispin or Johnny Young Bosch or any of those guys in a room and have them do nothing but sign for 8 hours. And maybe you might see the end of their line eventually. What we do is we limit it to what is reasonable, which is one item per person. We limit it to the number of people that the guests can get through in about an hour. Now, we're probably going to take a few of our guests up on their offer to do an hour and a half or maybe even 2 hours, depending on how the scheduling works out. But, you know, when you got 20 people to deal with and every one of them needs to really have about two sessions, there's only so much we can do with that. You can't expect everyone to pull a Neil Gaiman and sign until their arm falls off. So that's just something that people are going to have to accept, is you're not always going to be able to get the autograph. We don't charge for them. We don't let guests charge for them at our official sessions. Many of the guests will do something in the dealer's room to give you an additional chance to get it. But, you know, there is a limit as to how much we can do. One of the things that has helped, though, in the last couple of years is when we moved dance, that freed up an enormous amount of space. And one of the things that people don't realize is the bigger challenge we have right now is lining people up for the next autograph session while one's still going on. The perfect solution to that, in my mind, would be if we had a spare exhibit hall and we could do the lines like they do at Comic-Con or some of the other cons where they've got a long, largely empty exhibit hall to use.
Right.
We've filled up all the space we got. So rather than do it that way, we're going to take advantage of the space we've got and get as many people through as we can. Okay. I'm sorry that the guy had problems getting through. And there have been some sessions that have gone better than others. A lot of times there's stuff that, you know, screws up the planning. More often than not, it's because people in line decide that even though they're not in an official line, they've decided that they're going to pretend like it is. And, you know, that becomes problematic.
The line that goes to nowhere.
Yeah.
We've had that happen more than a couple of times.
Yeah. But yeah, so we're probably going to continue to do things pretty much the way that we do. And, you know, he's welcome to pop on our forums and offer suggestions. Almost none of the suggestions that people have offered would actually solve the problem, because I've seen them in practice in other places. And the biggest problem is scale.
This next question actually leads into a line of questioning I did want to get into. So we'll do that in a minute. But Agent 355 asks, does Otakon ever have its masquerade taped? If not, why? I can't go to Otakon on the Saturdays. I've never been able to see the masquerade.
Terry, you want to?
Yeah. Sure, I'll comment on that. There are multiple factors that go into whether or not masquerade can be taped. And more importantly, I think the question is not whether it's taped, but is it ever actually broadcast or shown again, or, you know, rebroadcast? There are contractual issues that have to be addressed within both the convention center and with the unions. There are potential legal issues and contractual issues that have to be looked at when it comes to the owners of the properties that are being depicted in costume. And actually, pardon me, since we're talking about the masquerade, we're talking about the arena, not the Baltimore Convention Center, but many of the concerns are the same. So we've spent every year, the question comes up, every year we look at it and we do our best to try and determine what can be allowed, what can't be, what can be shown by press, what can't be. And every year we evolve and show what and release what our policies are going to be. And we're looking at them again this year to see what we can and can't do.
We keep pushing up against what is sadly a fact of life in big cities, but especially big East Coast cities, which are a bunch of contracts that were written and signed in the 70s before the entertainment world changed. And they're not in places that live and breathe entertainment like LA and New York. And that's just something that we have struggled constantly with. And that's the reason why you never see these awesome, awesome concerts that we've had. We can't release a tape of them. We can't release a video of them. We can't broadcast them. The best we can do is allow news organizations to show clips. And sometimes we can show them again in-house. So like a couple years for our 15th, we did a, you know, here's some greatest hits from Otakon concerts past. We'll probably do something along those lines this year. And I suspect we could get away with doing something like that for the concert or for the masquerade contest, Terry. That might be something we want to talk to Scott about.
Absolutely.
Well, and this brings me to another question that I forgot to bring up earlier, but, So this has been increasingly something that people have been talking about and asking about. When it comes to conventions, you don't want to discourage attendance, but the demand to watch the whole thing online, or at least the major events, is increasing. And people keep saying, well, why doesn't San Diego Comic-Con, which is obviously the critical mass of pop culture conventions, just do a thing where they charge a fee and you can watch the major panels, or you can stream Hall H footage all day for a fee. So you pay a fee and you can either watch it live or you can watch it archived after the fact. But the fee that you pay pays for the equipment that it would take to actually stream it live. And I'm curious if, you know, obviously Otakon is not Comic-Con, and the potential audience is smaller. But has there been any thought of, like, you know, let's stream The Masquerade, you can watch it live for $4.99 at this one time, at this one place, or watch it archived later on? Has there been any thought of doing any kind of live streaming of the major events like that?
It's been thought of multiple times and brought up multiple times through the years. It's not always just a cost of the basic equipment. We've got the equipment to do it. What we don't have are it truly comes down to contracts.
Yeah, the big
exorbitantly expensive.
The big sticking point is that once you have tailored your event to be a commercial broadcast, no matter how you pay for it or how you redistribute it, it triggers a clause that means instead of getting the preferred labor rates that we get for being a nonprofit hosting a members-only event, you start to run into things like, well, Ticketmaster has some say in some places. The union rate is different for commercial versus non-commercial. Mm. Once that switch is flipped, like say at the arena, you know, if you remember a few years ago, in fact Terry's here, when we had Larkin Seal, they released a DVD of their concert here. Mm-hmm. They paid for that. If we had paid for that, it would change our status in how we negotiate with the facilities, and that's a barrier we have not yet found a cost effective way to pass without repercussions for us. I've been living and breathing this thing for almost 8 years now. So,
right? Yeah. No. That's interesting. Then, so like, even just doing like a simple live stream, where it's like, okay, go to our Justin.tv account and you can watch The Masquerade here for Otakon members only. You pay us $2 or something, and you can get into our private Justin.tv channel and watch it streaming live from this thing. Even that changes your entire contract.
A few years ago, we decided to it would be fun to live stream the setup of the dealer's room.
Oh, my God.
And it was all done very innocently. But the problem was that was technically a broadcast for distribution. It happened to hit during the point at which the labor contract was being renegotiated with the facilities, which, by the way, we have no say in that. We have to use whoever they tell us to use. I mean, that's the facility makes that agreement. Right. And that's city politics and state politics and big giant unions, people with lots more money than us, mm-hmm. And lots more lawyers. And they basically said, well, you've now broken your contract, you're live streaming, you're broadcasting the contents of your event. And we really had to go hard to the wall and say, guys, we streamed the video of the dealer's room setup largely so we could do it fast forward at the video at the end. That's not the same as broadcasting an Aerosmith concert and charging for it.
Yeah.
But that was going to cost us a lot of money.
and something to be said.
Entire budget worth of money.
Wow. That's insane. Okay. So in other words, you're dealing with people who have not quite caught up with the fact that even if you did it for free, they'd still nail you to the wall.
Yeah.
I would say it's not even because it's being done maliciously or, in any way. The contracts that were written before streaming became a common thing are written in such a way that you have to enforce it. And so there are multiple parties whose hands are tied. That being said, we're evaluating it, and we evaluate it every year to see what can and can't be done.
Yeah, everybody's not being a bear about this. It's just that you sign an agreement and it says this, and you have to do that, or you open up all sorts of cans of worms. Now, having said that, you know, it's much the same as why we sometimes have to yell at people who post our content online. A, you didn't pay for that, and you didn't pay for the rights to do that, and B, it could cost us a lot of money. You shouldn't do things like that without permission is the bottom line. And even if we could give you permission, someone somewhere is going to have to come up with a lot of money to make it happen.
Right. Well, maybe someday. One, you know, at the same time, like I've had that conversation with other with others in a position to potentially live stream their events. And one of the biggest things is like, well, you don't want to discourage attendance. Where it's like, it's not like E3 where you can't get in. You can't just buy a ticket to E3. You have to be a professional in order to get into that event. If you're trying to attract attendance, I'm sure that you guys should live stream literally everything you do. It's like, well, that's just going to kill attendance. People would, it's a bunch of nerds. They're going to stay home and watch it on their computer. They're not going to go to the show.
You know, I would actually disagree. I personally don't have that concern.
Really?
For me,
I do.
Being at a convention is about the experience. I mean, being with other people, socializing. I mean, the common joke about otaku is they never leave their houses, but there's a vast majority of people who go to Otakon and go to other and all conventions who are there to socialize.
Sure.
And that's true. You know, and it's an excuse. So I'm not worried about that particular audience. I think that, you know, we know that there's a demand. There's people who want to see this not necessarily as a live stream, but as a broadcast after the fact, because they want to relive the experience. Or those are the ones that we want to try and help.
Because they went to another. I mean, we always count a program, and if you're in panel one and the other awesome thing you wanted to see is in panel three, you've missed that part of it, and that thing where that guest did that crazy thing or where they showed that insane video. You know, even aside from the craziness of like trying to do a Mike Tool video broadcast, that ain't going to happen. But you would want to be able to do that. And at the very least, we would love to be able to do that for our members. But the cost is just ridiculous, and the repercussions are unpleasant.
I want to say the last time I saw the contract, it made me want to cry when I saw the amount.
Jeez. Man.
It's like, I could buy my house a few times.
Holy crap. Okay, all right, moving on. Vicious Smith asks, who is a dream music act for the convention, obviously aside from the ones you've already had?
I was going to say, we keep getting them eventually. I mean, dare to dream big, people. I'm just saying. No, a few years ago, I would have said Yoshida Brothers would have been on that list. And that's just because me personally, I really like that taking the traditional and making it awesome thing. But there must be half a dozen musical guests that would be really great to get. Some of them have no interest in coming to the U.S. and doing stuff. The one that always comes up on our boards is any of the Johnny's acts. Johnny's is the big boy band producers of Japan.
Yeah.
They manufacture pop bands like crazy. And some of them are excellent. Some of them are really good, but
Johnny's,
they have no interest at all in coming and doing an anime con for cheap or for free when they can go anywhere in Asia and attract a stadium full of middle-aged women with disposable income.
Right.
And frankly, you don't want to deal with them. You do not want that.
Look, we've had arguably some of the biggest international, you know, Japan-flavored acts out there in some form or another. I mean, we freaking had half of X-Japan show up because they wanted to, and we squeezed them into the halftime of our masquerade, and they were cool with that. It's really, really weird to be in the position we're in. There's acts I wish that we'd gotten first. I like there's a band called Move that I like a lot. But, you know, I think whatever we come up with winds up being my favorite thing that year anyway.
Yeah, I've had the pleasure of being the liaison, you know, to manage several of the acts that Otakon has brought over. And, you know, I've always come in and they've always been new to me. And by the time we're done, I'm a fan. So, you know, it's always a pleasant surprise. It's always, you know, it's always enjoyable. Whoever we manage to, anyone that we manage to bring over.
I will say that I am currently negotiating with one of my dream acts right now. So,
okay,
it's my dream act too. So, keep your finger. A lot of us have our fingers crossed on that one.
So, Electric Light Orchestra will be appearing in Otakon 2014.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Okay. we talked about this a little bit, but if you could go into it just a bit more. Yami Yangi asks, why start a con so far away from where Otakon is normally held?
Well, part of it is to bring in our folks on the West Coast and have them more involved. Part of it is to extend our missions. Part of it is to try something new. I know that it is not quite all the way on the other side of the country, but it's almost all the way on the other side of the country from Baltimore.
Right.
But at the same time, you've got to work. You got to work hard to make it function. And I'm just rambling, really.
You know what? I'll comment on that, and just to say, you know, we touch upon, a membership that is already across the country, but it's mostly focused on the Northeast.
Right.
And when we look at our mission and what are our opportunities to try and reach out to more people, we yield more opportunity by going to a region where we are not represented anywhere near as much as we are already on the Northeast. We are in the Northeast. We have multiple events. We have not only Otakon, but our presence at the Cherry Blossom Festival in D.C. We have the music festival that just passed. We have the Thursday Matsuri that we do right before Otakon. So we already run multiple events that touch upon the Northeast corridor. And for us to expand and open up and broaden our mission, we have to look at more than just where we're already established and take a chance.
And the
other thing that gets in that too is that within 3 hours drive of Otakon, you have at least two other cons that have more than 10,000 people, and within 5 hours drive, you can get another 20,000 person con. So why do we want to try to start something new in an area where there are so many options so close in?
Right. Okay. All right. Almost done here. Fist to the MFK asks, were there other cities Otakon considered expanding to before deciding on Las Vegas?
There were a couple other cities that were looked at, some of which were on the East Coast, one of which was not even in this country, that were looked at. Part of what turned us off from those places were, one of them, the market is oversaturated is probably an understatement. I think you could throw a rock at a calendar and hit a con. You couldn't pick a weekend where there wasn't a convention somewhere going on in that state. The other one, it was too far fetched. I know it seems kind of funny considering we've moved all the way out to the out west to Vegas, but moving out of country really is a bit far fetched, and it offers a whole new slew of problems. Not so much problems. It's a whole different ballgame. You don't know what you're dealing with. At least we don't. So that's where it is, as far as that's concerned. But what really drew us in is the fact that the folks in Vegas came to us. They said, hey, take a look at us. We didn't go to them. They came to us. They showed us that's what they wanted. And
they showed up with market research.
I'm sorry, say again, Jim?
They showed up with market research, and they were prepared to try to lure us all out west, which we knew we weren't going to do.
Right. They truly did. They did their research on us. They knew about how many people came to the convention. They knew exactly what times of year, the market that we were going through. they really did their homework. It was very, very impressive, to be honest with you, all of what they had gone through.
But your question was, were there other cities looked at? The answer is yes.
Yeah. Well, it makes a lot less sense for you guys to go, hey, we're going to do Otakon DC.
Well, yeah.
There's somebody berating us right now on one of the social media because we're not doing another Otakon in Baltimore on a different weekend. And we're like, there are 5 or 6 anime cons within 2 hours drive of our home.
Right.
Why would we do that?
I mean, hell, you guys are your Vegas one is a week before Anime LA, and that's 3 hours away from.
Well, that's true, but Anime LA is. I know this because I was just there for Gallifrey. They're about the same size as Gallifrey, and Gallifrey is filling up the space. Gallifrey famously decided this year that they're not going to move, they're not going to expand, they're going to continue to run with the cap. I think ALA will have to do that this year as well. And it's because they like where they are, they like the size that they are, and that's a completely valid choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you got 20 million people in LA alone, they got to go somewhere.
Yeah, totally.
We got the 30,000 people in a metro area that has about half that many. So, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Vinny Av, AGC asks, looking long term, do you see this as the first satellite con with others on the way?
How about we get this one in the bag first? I guess this is the best way to put it.
There was an idea about, 6 or 7 years ago. It would have been actually about 2005, I think. After our huge jump in 2004, we kind of had a where do we want to go from here thing. And one of the ideas that came up as a result of brainstorming from that was the idea of starting off mini cons that were like themed and that could be run on a much smaller scale throughout the year. And that didn't really happen, but some of that led to things like Manga Next. So it's the idea of sort of branching off and separating out a little bit has definitely occurred to us. But what has happened in the last, 10 years is that we've gone from having 20 anime cons to having 450 in the US. So maybe that need has been filled in other ways.
Something I'm going to just jump in and state, just to clarify, there isn't a direct lineage from that planning meeting and Manga Next. Anime Next, of course.
Yeah. So. But some of the people, and this is back to cross-fertilization, some of the people that worked with Otakon that were coming up with that idea also worked for Anime Next. So it's there is, as well as I do, that this is an incestuous community.
I highly doubt that there are really any staffer at Otakon that only works Otakon and works no other cons.
That's true.
I can't think of any off the top of my head. I'm sure that there are some.
But I do.
I work another convention. Our head of exhibitions works at least one, if not more, other conventions.
Right. Incestuousness, of course, in keeping with anime content these days. So,
there you
go. don't say that. Our mascots are brother and sister. Don't
don't give ideas, please.
Okay, last question here from Vinny Av, AGC. Does Otakorp intend to have other types of events beyond cons and music festivals? And he mentions here the possibility of a monthly lecture series. It's just an idea, I guess.
That's a cool idea, actually. And
actually, really cool.
Yeah, we've actually talked about trying to do something along those lines at one point when we were talking to the Cherry Blossom Festival people, because the folks we work with at the Cherry Blossom Festival are the Freer and Sackler Galleries, which is the Asian art exhibits at the Smithsonian. We talked about possibilities for more sustained involvement, because like the Japanese Culture Center in DC is another group that we work with. And one of the challenges that they always face is how to get what they offer to be more relevant to the youth, who aren't being dragged there on a school trip. They want them to come because, wow, this is cool. Well, we give them an outlet to that audience. And at the same time, that provides us a way to fulfill our mission, because we've literally driven people, because they love pop culture, to go check out a museum exhibit. How could that be any more our mission, really? But budgetary realities and staff limitations prevent that from going too far. It's a cool idea, though, and it's probably worth putting in the bucket to see if it matures into anything.
I think I'll comment and just simply say that it's a great idea, and I think you've reminded us of previous talks about that, and it's in the bucket for us to think about.
Cool. Okay. So that wraps it up. Otakon this year is August 9th through 11th in Baltimore. Tickets are still available, right?
Memberships.
Registrations.
Okay. No, that's okay.
Registration began on Tuesday of this week. So okay.
So people can do that now. Submit your panels to be rejected, I guess. Is that already happening?
No, not yet.
In a little while.
Okay.
Yes. And if you want to express your frustration with our event when you can't get into the event that you want, or you get stuck in a line that seems to go on forever, although there's really no point in being in a line that goes on forever, don't forget that we have a video game that you can beat up on fellow congoers.
And I think you can also beat up on Jim.
No.
Yes. there will be guest appearances by multiple people in that game, I believe.
Including other conventions, actually.
Yes.
Absolutely. Oh, so that you're talking about that Kickstarter thing. So that did actually meet its funding.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it did. It is in development now.
Water. Cool. They were looking for 20,000 or 22,000, and they got like 33.
Cool. Well, hopefully it won't vanish like lots of other Kickstarter projects.
The guys that are doing it are doing a bang up job. They continually give us updates as our booth travels to other conventions. There is typically a machine with a controller, and they're showing a demo of the video game so people can see what stage of development it's in. The guys at Studio Nasu release artwork as to what's going on right now. So hopefully that will continue to run on time and finish up and be fantastic.
Cool. And then Otakon Vegas is January 3 through 5, and obviously details forthcoming.
Otakonvegas.com.
Great. Okay. Well, guys, it's always a pleasure to have you guys on. Looking forward to the show this year. Justin, you're planning on attending, right?
Yes, I am actually. We were thinking about going. You were thinking about going as well, weren't you?
Oh, I'm going to go. I'll be there.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. If you're, I mean, I really had a good time last year, so I'm definitely going back if I can.
So hopefully,
don't trip back out this time.
Yeah, that would be that kind of threw a wrench into things for me.
And you know, and if we can somehow manage to get our panel approved, maybe we'll get to do a live. And cast.
I don't know. Are we allowed to record media at Otakon and put it on the internet?
I believe that we will be sharing those policies with you as they become available. And okay. Obviously, you know how to reach me. So,
right. Okay, guys. Can't thank you enough. Best of luck with the show this year. And we'll see you in August, I guess.
All right.
Great talking with you guys.
Good talking with you.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Jim, Terry, and Andy for showing up. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at thenewdivision.net. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating, a little review. We would appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week, right? We can count on you for doing that.